Hello, welcome to Risking Failure. I'm Mark Dobson. Maybe this is the first show you've heard. Maybe it's the last show you'll ever hear. Or maybe you're regular. We are just stoked to have you on board again. Risking Failure is a podcast where two mates on each side of the world chew the fat on something that's going on in their world, and you get to be a fly on the wall and hear a legitimate, honest conversation between two friends. No one trying to be an expert. We're just milling through the challenges of life. My good friend Mick Dunn on the other side of the world. How are you, mate?
I'm good. How are your muscles?
Oh, I'm good. How did you know I've been back at the gym? Oh. Actually, I haven't been to the gym. I've bloody been to Bali. That is a great way to lose a couple of sizes, pant sizes, in a very short period of time. You come back with a tan, you lose 2 kilos after having Bali belly, and I'm not even sure if it was worth the holiday because I've put the 2 kilos back on. But my God, Mick.
You didn't fare so well. What happened? Did you eat something? Obviously, you ate something that wasn't agreeing with you.
Mate, what country like has a bloody diarrhea named after it? Bali Belly. The only other one is Delhi Belly from India. I'm like, it's got its own diarrhea name. Like, and every time I talk to someone, so many people have been there going, oh, yeah, I was crook forever coming. I'm like, what is going on in that country where even if you – like, I eat – mate, when I travel, I eat street food. I take all sorts of crazy risks with locals.
Problem right there.
Nah, in Bali, I didn't do – I was just like – just being normal.
Oh, you're saying you normally do that, but at Bali you took an exception to that rule and stayed on the middle ground, huh?
Well, I was staying in like these sort of resorty, not resorts. Like mm-hmm. When you've been to Bali, you know, it's not really a resort. It's like a, but I wasn't doing anything stupid and I got so sick, mate. You know, in your life, you've got a couple of all-time great illnesses. You look back and go, mate, that was epic. That was an epic few days. I didn't think I was going to make it. And, you know, like this was absolutely top. Epic.
Well, congratulations, mate.
I made it.
It's an achievement. I made it.
And, but anyway, so to answer your question, I've got a tan. I was 2 kilos lighter and I'm feeling good. What about you, mate?
I've been doing good too. Started a little bit of travel and I don't know. It's just good summer here getting stuff done. Just built a playground in the front yard for the kids and getting stuff done for this, prepping for the warm weather. It's beautiful out here. So
listeners, Mick and I have to do this little like, hey, how you doing? Because we actually haven't spoken for nearly 3 weeks. So we've actually got lots of stuff we want to swap stories on. But to keep it up and happening, what happened off air before you were joining us? We started to chew the fat on a few things and we're like, we should record this topic. Because Mick and I had both listened to a recent podcast by Tim Ferriss, where he actually discusses, he's a couple that are on their second marriage and they've written a book called, I think it was Holy Cows. Was it Holy Cows? Sacred Cows. Mm-hmm. Sacred Cows. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about the sacred cows that we believe in a community when it comes to relationships and marriage. And they were talking about marriage. And so Mick and I have both just listened to it. And I was hoping that you'd listen to it, mate. And then Mick, of course, goes, well, I have. And we started chewing the fat. And we're like, you know what? There is not enough discussion about marriage, but particularly for men, the discussion around that journey and what it's like and then the challenges. And these guys talked about it, but Mick and I both had a lot of thoughts on it. So do you want to sum up what he was talking about so the listener is up to speed and then we should unleash with a barrage of ideas, Mick?
Yeah, well, I kind of felt like it was a little bit about marriage, but it was more about the journey in general. I felt like, so for those that are listening, it is worth going to check out. And so Tim was interviewing this couple and they were really kind of putting out some honest ideas and information about their journey. I think both of them had been divorced, right? Come together. There's probably a whole pre-story to that, but so there's some comparison in some ways to their own journeys. I thought it was most interesting to listen to what Tim was struggling with, to be quite honest, because he was talking about the process of being single and wrestling with not being married, so to speak, and
all his friends are having kids and they're getting married, and he's starting to get confronted by the stigma, or not just the stigma, but just the the question, like, I love that John Mayer line in his song, am I living it right? Like, am I missing something? Because Tim's saying he's really happy. And I could relate to Tim. And I've seen this in his podcast for a long time when he talks about stuff and I've read his books. I'm like, I can relate to this guy on so many levels because I'm really happy single. I'm really comfortable single. I'm actually really, really happy. Now, that doesn't mean there's not something else that could be naturally, that could be really, you know, more joy or more fulfillment in relationship. But you're always exploring what everybody, you know, am I missing something? And they made a couple of good points. They said that the structure of family, the partner and then the kids, naturally brings purpose to your life. And I've felt this for a long time, that there's a natural, the framework of it will bring purpose and joy and closeness. If you've got those things in other aspects of your life, you're not going to need that as much or be drawn to it as much because it's already met. And I feel like I've got a lot of purpose in my life. Oh, that's my phone. That's my agent. That's my agent. How come that's even making noise? It shouldn't be. It's on silent.
You're all class, Dobbo. Thanks for being so prepared today.
It's because I've got this new software from Apple where your phone, your computer rings as well as your phone.
Hmm.
Oh, I don't know what we're going to do about that. Guess what, listeners? You're going to be hearing that a fair bit today. And that made a lot of sense where you've got a sense of purpose. So there, and that's what he was saying. He's like, I'm really happy. And he actually asked them, do you know people that are single, over 40-something, and are legitimately happy? And they had a great answer. They were like, well, we know people that, in any bracket, that experience both happiness and sadness, that it's not, those emotions are not exclusive to being in a relationship or being out of it. She said, but we do see more joy in people that choose. They're not wishing they were something else. So when someone's like, oh, I'm just, this is how I live, and this is, like, she's like, I've got friends that have chosen not to have kids, and they're really comfortable with that. And there's other people that are wishing they had kids, and because they're wishing they had kids and they don't have them, there's a lot of discomfort. And they were saying, you know, people who just go, yeah, I this is how I date, or this is relationships I have, and they've really just not so much accepted that from a surrender, but they go, this is me, that they're happy, and that was an interesting,
yeah,
that was interesting. Go on.
I agree. The contrasting thing, I think, is an interesting perspective, like the people that are just comfortable, but then again, I feel like they talked about this as well. It's impossible not to be contrasting whatever you're doing with something else anyway. You know what I mean? And so,
exactly, yeah.
That's the part that I feel like doesn't get talked about enough or shared enough. In general, doesn't matter what, career, anything. Like, people don't sit at work and talk about how they're constantly thinking about whether or not they should be in another job. And I'm not saying that people constantly think about that, but I think that one of the problems when you specifically look at marriage is that there's this perception that you get married and then all of that, just the thinking you bought into the marriage, just will continue. And so I think that there's a societal belief that everything that leads up to the marriage just ends at that point. Like, you're no longer somebody that's constantly comparing yourself to somebody else or constantly worried about whether you're doing enough or not and all these other things. Like, and they did talk about that. It was like, on the day before the marriage, the day after marriage, it's the same thing. It's the same relationship. The same
fundamental challenge that there's, it's, that's right, dynamic.
And
that it's,
they, like, were sort of saying, like, you're in the same relationship. If you got married on Wednesday, the relationship is no different on Tuesday or Thursday. Like, it's the same thing. And I think they were highlighting the point that we're putting too much weight and emphasis on the marriage, that it changes the dynamic of the relationship, and it doesn't, and people get...
But what I hear on that
surprised is... surprised by that, maybe, but...
What I hear is that we live in a world that is sucked into the myth of permanence. That now that we're married, that feeling is permanent. And that's just not ever realistic. But because we believe that, and it's only subtle, it's very difficult. I haven't really worked out how to explain this in a really clear way to people yet, but because we believe in permanence, that now we're married, we live happily ever after, and we logically go, no, I know it doesn't work like that, but really, we don't know that. That means that later on, if you say, I'm really struggling in my marriage, then there's this stigma that comes with that. It's like, what do you mean? Like, hang on, no. And there's this, it's not okay. And so even internally, you're like, oh my God, I thought I'd be feeling great now. And I'm not. I'm feeling either more trapped or more confused, or I'm not happy. And I'm not sure if it's my partner. I'm not sure what's going on. Like I felt like that whole idea about, they were saying that the marriage doesn't change the relationship. But I think that we as a community think that something permanent shifts. The one thing that I am attracted to from marriage, only because of recently a couple of experiences, is that when someone says they commit to you at that level, I think that's a real, for me personally, like I, last year, James got married and he asked me to be part of his wedding party. I hadn't actually been in a wedding party before, which was, at my age, is a little bit different considering I've got so many, but my friends actually haven't been getting married. Like they're in relationships or they're, it's just fluid. And you go to a lot of weddings, but you're just not in the necessarily in the party. And I was in the party, and not only did I love that experience, but I was shocked when James asked me to be in the wedding party. I didn't see that coming at all. It wasn't even on my radar. And my friends are going, of course you and James are best mates. I was like, oh yeah, I suppose. But it was only when that had been acknowledged in a structured way that I really see James differently now. Like there's more, and it's crazy because it's not like you wouldn't have thought I would have seen it differently before, but there's more commitment, there's more warmth, there's more level of importance. And I've had that happen in a few different relationships in the last, say, 18 months, where there's been this, something said, something stated between two people. And I'm like, whoa, that creates a level of real, I got your back loyalty to each other. So I think that I'm attracted to that idea that when you choose to be married, you're like, right, we're in. And that must feel very heartening or something.
Yeah, because that was interesting because that couple, Tim said that, is like essentially you're saying you don't believe in the institution of marriage, yet why'd you get remarried? And that was kind of their answer, was like, well, there's an element of beauty and ceremonial that you don't have to embrace everything else, is what they were talking about, that we just, that was what we felt we needed to do to continue to establish our closeness, that you just get closer and closer. And this just seemed like the logical thing for us to do to continue to be closer. And that was sort of their answer. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. What I think is interesting is how married and not married group, like a group of friends, like it's just interesting how once people begin to get married, like that there becomes more distance, not emotionally so much as just lifestyles change, and it's very normal and obvious in that way, but the ability to relate to one another becomes different. And I don't know that we need to like work on that as people or not, but it is, I think sometimes I can't help but wonder whether it comes across exclusive in some way, that as though for some people they may be looking from the single side at the married folks like they're moving on and moving up or something like that, and then the married people may be feeling like they're missing out. You know, or you know, checking out or whatever it is, you know, like it's just they're committing to something else now and they're putting more time into that, and there's a lot of joy and there's a lot of potential pain in that too, but you know, they're just committed to new experiences that don't involve the other friends anymore as much. So I find that to be interesting because it adds pressure to both sides of the equation. And
well, it's definitely true because I think when I think about my friends who have just started living together, before if I called them, I knew they were pretty much on their own, so they're going to answer the phone and have a chat, say. But now if I call them, there's a good chance that their partner is in the room or in the house with them.
Mm.
And it becomes a bit rude for them to sit on the phone for an hour. There's this expectation that, you know, generally if someone's in the room with you, you hang out with them. So already I'm aware of that. Already I'm aware of, like some relationships are changing that if you say, hey, what you doing for dinner? They're like, oh, we've already eaten. And I'm sure they miss it as well. Just like parents when they have children and they're constantly looking after their kids, they miss that good conversation with their friends as well because they're split between paying attention to the kids and being involved in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just a natural element of the shifting. But yeah, you're right. I think that all parties notice it. And I've noticed when I go in relationships and out of relationships, as do the people in my world, that sometimes you'll go into a relationship and your friends start to get a little bit narky at you going, oh, you sort of disappear. And you're like, you don't really, there's a changing of where your time and energy goes,
mm-hmm.
Which is really difficult. And then of course, when you've been in a relationship for a long time, you go, oh, we're going to break up. You're like, I don't have any friends. And they are there, but they're like, they're just dormant. Or that you are not quite kept in that circle anymore?
No, I know what you mean. You're still connected, but at arm's length. What's interesting is when you have kids, it's like you've moved to a different time zone. Literally, you're operating on two different timelines now, and that distance gets created even further, even between brothers and sisters and everything. It's like the ability to relate to one another changes once again. And I think that's when you actually begin to see more of a closeness with parents because you begin to understand what they went through and all of a sudden they become crucial because you're like, oh my God, they have all the answers I need. And then they're acutely aware that you need that help and that they can do something, which is, you know, very interesting unto itself.
So as I always publicly announce, I've got a counselor for everything, right? So, and it ain't because I'm broken, like, which I openly say, I'm like, I just have a passion for learning. So if I reckon that I don't understand something or I want to grow, and I openly go to, also I hear someone that's awesome, I go, I'll just get there, I'll book an appointment and they'll go, I'll just get there and they're like, what do you want to talk about? And I'll be like, just, I don't know, I'm going to tell you about my life, you give me your opinion. Like, I love it, right? So there's this woman that I go to maybe 3 or 4 times a year because I heard she's awesome with relationships. I've got a couple of this, and there's one in Sydney, there's one in Melbourne. And if you need to know that person, I'm happy to put you onto them. You can email us, right? So anyway, she's got this great model about relationships for blokes particularly. She says, getting into a committed relationship, really committed relationship, pretty much marriage, right, or the equivalent. She says, it's like crossing a river that's really cranking. And there's two ways to cross the river. You can hop on a ferry and get across the river, or you can do the work and actually swim across the river yourself. And she said it's a journey to get across that river because at every stage you become aware of the challenges that you've got to let go more and more of the bank, and you've got to do a lot of work to get to the other bank. And she said the challenges are things like, if you said, when you move across the river slowly, you start to think through, huh, what does this commitment mean? Like, who am I not dating now? Or where will my time be going now? And what am I saying yes to? And what am I saying no to? Where some people who sort of naively say jump into marriage go, I'll catch a ferry across. Yeah, let's get married. And then once they're in the marriage, then they've got to work through all these sorts of things that they really needed to address before. And she said this is the difference between a boy and a man. The boy catches the ferry across and doesn't want to do the work. The man journeys across the river, and when they've committed to the relationship, they've already really committed, and that relationship is not vulnerable to fickle whims. And that was a really interesting model for me because as I was talking about where I was at, I suddenly said, oh, right, so when I'm discussing this or thinking this through, this is me, say, three quarters of the way through the river or half the way through the river, whatever the river. But I was like, this is it's a legitimate conversation to have, because sometimes you have those conversations with your friends and family and it's easy for them to jump to a conclusion that, oh, you should be in the relationship or you shouldn't be, or you don't want to think about that stuff, or that just forget about that, or that's really important, you need to address that. Where she was really giving it permission to journey through all these things so that you can make a really healthy decision. And I loved that model. That really sat well with me.
In some ways, yeah, as you were talking about it, I was just sort of trying to internalize it a little bit and thinking about, I think there's also a bit of a combination of that. There's the hard work that happens ahead of all of that. And I think you can be training and swimming back and forth across the river and know what it takes and the work that it takes, such that when you show up, it's bleedingly obvious to you when there's a ferry and that you're fine with jumping on it because you know what it means not to jump on it and you know what it means to be on it, and you're perfectly okay to jump off the ferry if it stops and do the hard work to get to the other side. But you're not going to create a long distance hard journey out of something when you know is just easy and ready to go.
I think a good example about a tangible for this is, say, level of honesty. Where there's some things you go, no, I really need to communicate this or get clear on what I feel on this topic. And there's other things you go, this is, doesn't matter. You know, like.
Yeah, before we forget, that brings out something that was in that discussion with Tim Ferriss, because he said, which I thought was very honest and really good of him.
Credit to him, right? Yeah.
He said, what I'm so fearful of is that I'm always faithful in my relationships. I've never cheated on somebody before, but I'm also scared that once I get beyond a certain point, I'm constantly thinking of someone else or somewhere else, I guess was the way he put it, a lot more eloquently, but basically he was like, I'm worried about me beyond that point, that whether I can sustain that or not, because I don't know that I can or not. And he was putting that to the couple and saying, well, what do you think about that? Like, what if you're just getting married because it seems like a good idea and the next, you know, you feel passionate about the next whatever year, but you don't feel so certain about what's going to happen in the long term and you don't trust yourself. And the guy's response was, well, obviously you'd want to be having that discussion before you get married. And if you do, and she is responsive to that and you talk about it honestly and you walk through it, then it would make sense to continue, right? And then he was like, but if she's mad at you for thinking those things, then it's probably a pretty good suggestion that this is not the right relationship to be in. And I thought that was great because he was really honing in on the importance of honesty, which is just such, it's at the bedrock of everything.
I think it is. And I know so many people that just lie all the time. They don't even know they're doing it. They're telling small mistruths.
Well, we all do all the time, right? I mean, we're always...
Right, but yes, that's true.
Like, how you doing? Are you busy? Yeah, great. And all of that. Great. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and some of that's social ritual stuff, and it's not appropriate to disclose epic levels of emotion before you've talked about the weather, right? So, but there are other times when it's a mistruth and they know, but the relationship's being built around something on that. Like it's, or I think it doesn't matter, but it does. It's, and,
I know what you mean.
I just think that's one of the great things to be able to master is your ability to tell the truth. But when you tell the truth, sometimes people don't dig deep enough. So they go, the truth is, I don't know. The truth is, I hate you in that dress. And you're like,
That's not
a truth. That's like
it's almost like in some ways, I think there's probably some caution in saying I do before you've said I feel. Like knowing what it is like to be able to be in a relationship with somebody where you have had those discussions of I feel like this and I feel like that, and just being honest about stuff is what helps us navigate everything, right? But
it's its own skill, though, honesty. It, like, to be able to not be reactive and shallow, but, like, because I really believe the truth sets you free, but if you say something and it doesn't turn out to free you, then you didn't hear the truth. You just got a surface level.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big... But, look, I find in all my relationships, the more honest I can be,
mm-hmm.
the healthier the relationship. But, oh, God, that's big, actually. We might talk about that another day.
Well, it is, and it you know, I mean, it's sort of like what Conversations with God says, right, about, like, truth, joy, and love. Like, these three things are interchangeable, but they're never – they're always – they follow each other in no particular order.
Yeah.
So the path to get to love may mean truth and joy and love, you know, whatever.
Right. Right. So when you say something true or say something honest, you've got to go, is this loving? Is this, because if it's not a loving thing to say, then it's not actually a true thing to say.
Right. And that would be the path to joy. And if it feels, or if you're experiencing a joyful moment, then there's truth in that moment, which leads to love. And, you know, all three, you know, just continue to circulate together. And it's like, in some ways, that's at the bed of that honesty thing is like, is it going to lead to one of those three outcomes? Because if it leads to one of those three outcomes, then, and it's done in, you know, a loving and sincere way, then only good could come of that. But I think what's interesting is that maybe what people struggle with is their definition of good.
Yes.
Because I think we hold on too much to, if I'm honest, then I'll say these things and then he'll stay with me and then I'll be happy and then we'll get married. And that's their good outcome. But in reality, they're just looking for the truthful outcome, which would be the good one. And the truthful one may be the exact opposite of what they think they're seeking.
Yeah, I think that comes back to the permanence thing. People think that it's only good if things stay the same or they feel good, but where sometimes good is actually to let go. It's uncomfortable, but if we allow it to play out over time, then if we can be uncomfortable for a little bit, it actually plays out to a much better space, but we can't be attached to what outcome we want. And I think that was great, the example that from the Tim Ferriss show, we said, well, if you tell her these are your concerns and she goes, yeah, okay, I'd love to talk about that, then that's a healthy space. If they say, oh, that's outrageous that you can think that you could love me for 2 years and then just disappear off the planet, how am I meant to feel safe? You're like, well, we can't have this conversation, then I don't want to overinvest. And so it's going to be awkward for the next 3 months while that relationship dissolves. But in the long term, you end up in a relationship where you can have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I think is really challenging with honesty is being able to talk about your concerns about your feelings in the relationship and how committed you are to it and how what your concerns fundamentally are without whether you're married or not married, right? Whether you're just entering the relationship, being there for 2 years, whatever. Fundamentally being able to talk about your concerns without it becoming a shitstorm. There's a show on Australia at the moment, Married at First Sight, I think it's called, or something like that, right? It's got all sorts of moral bullshit going on about it. But anyway, and I tend to not watch these shows because I find as soon as you turn them on, they do actually suck you in. They're really well designed. So I was at a friend's house recently. It's on, they've sort of, you know, so I'm sort of just sort of checking it out, sort of with a, you know, raised eyebrow. But there was this guy and he'd gone and hung out with his mate. He's basically gotten married to this girl and they've gone straight from being, say, never meeting each other, straight to being in marriage, straight to living in the same house, same bed. Well, they're not sharing the bed at the time, but they're like going to work and it doesn't have that excitement level. It just becomes very functional straight away. And he goes to his mates and he says, started great, but I don't know, it's sort of not going awesome. He talks to them openly. And then they're like, well, what do you think about this? And you're not giving up on it, are you? And he says, I don't know. then he comes back and she says, so what did you talk about with your mates? And he's like, well, yeah, they helped me with a lot of stuff. And she says, well, what sort of stuff? And he's like, well, it's sort of private. It's really for me to think through. And I really felt that was a mistake at that point, because the issue is actually between the two of them, not him and his mates. So him and his mates, what you're really doing there is he's looking for clarity about it, but then he needs to come and say, and it really wouldn't be that hard to say, I'm concerned we've got straight to a functional space. And because it's a functional space, some of the chemistry that I'm used to is not here. And it's probably happening for you too. What shall we do about it? What do we think? Are you having this challenge like I am? Because I'd like a different experience, and maybe we could find ways to make it happen.
So do you think that's a red flag in a relationship if there's a tendency to talk to your friends before you're talking to your partner?
I don't necessarily think so, but I'm not an expert in that. But my instinct is that, like, I definitely talk to friends about all sorts of relationships, but I'm looking for the clarity so then I can have the conversation with the individual.
Okay.
If I don't conversation with the individual,
yeah,
because I hear people, like you've heard me say it before, where people, they talk to the gas company about their electric bill. Like, the number of times I have friends that come to me and, not the closest friends, but outside the circle, bitch and moan and complain about all the shit going on in their relationship. I'm like, we should talk about it. No, I feel better now. No, but the problem's still there. You just vented to the wrong person.
Mm-hmm. What you're sort of saying is, like, if you're sharing with other people, like talking with other people, you want to be getting input on how to move forward on the issue with your partner. Like, I know what you mean. Not venting.
Not just venting. And it is difficult because then you also don't want to burn your partner or any relationship. You don't want to burn that party.
Mm-hmm.
But I know in my life, in all my relationships, when I've brought the topic up that's on my mind, sometimes it hasn't been well received, but there's been many times when it has been really well received, and those relationships continue because I'm like, I'm worried about this. It's probably impacting you. And then instead of making a decision, that's a mistake I've made a long time ago. I'd be like, this is not working, I'm out. But it really should be, well, what do we want to do? Do we want to keep doing this like this, or do we want to change it? But as soon as we keep that we word, it's really, really powerful in my experience.
Mm. I'm just curious on your thoughts based on your own friendships, male friendships. It doesn't seem to me that men tend to share to the same level as women do. I think especially... You're probably just by the nature of what you do and the kind of person you are, you're probably more likely to be having candid, honest conversations between other male friends maybe anyway. But even still, I can't help but think that there's a lot of experience within relationships that men tend to keep fairly guarded on. You know,
I think
sometimes when you hear about men sharing on relationships, it's on the surface level stuff. And particularly in society, it's more about achievement in relationships and all of these things that it's just very teenager-like or very, you know, just very superficial. But I'm talking much different to that on talking through struggles. And I don't think men do that in groups. I think men do that and they hold on to the idea or the thought for a very long time before they finally talk to somebody about it. Which is not to say that women don't either, but I think probably women are faster to seek counsel.
Yeah. Or even if it's just they bounce it off their friends.
Right.
But there's a yin and a yang to both arguments, because I think that sometimes I've always been concerned that when I tell a woman something, that they're probably going to talk to their friends about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I sometimes like, that shouldn't be discussed. Like, that's private. I don't want you to tell anybody about this. And I think some of the best relationships I've ever had, I've had a sense that they've got good judgment on that stuff.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Because that really concerns me. That's something I've always got on my radar. And I'm not trying to attack women as a category.
Well, that's interesting, because you've talked in the past about non-negotiables that you would bring in a relationship. It sounds like that would actually be one for you.
It's huge. Yeah. Well, there's got to be trust there. Like, if I'm going to let you see me.
Well, it's probably that way for everyone, really, isn't it?
It is, but then I'm not sure that everybody's got trust in their relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Or respect, then I think that's the... And look, I think we all make mistakes on this sort of stuff. Or you also get in tricky situations where somebody starts asking you questions and you want to tell them what's going on for another party or a friend or something, but you're also trying to keep a boundary there. And some people do that thing, well, oh, look, I'm not really meant to tell anybody, but... I'm like, well, if you're not meant to fucking tell anybody, don't fucking tell anybody. Like, I think it's just wrong. And even when people are telling me, I'm like, I don't want to be told. I don't want to know this. I think it's just so disgusting because it's so disrespectful to the person that asked you to trust them, you know, to be trusted with this. And I know that's very difficult because sometimes for some people, I know my work listening to women, it is their nature to, I need to process this. I need to, and you, what we go back to the original discussion, like the female tends to, and I know I'm going to piss a whole lot of people off saying this, but the feminine energy tends to want to discuss it with their friends. They sit around as a group and they have a chat. With a bloke tends to refrain from doing that. He tends to go, the Dr. John Gray model, which says he goes to his cave and he tinkers with it and tries to work it out himself and comes out, might pick up an idea from somebody and then goes back to his cave and tries to work it out.
Yeah,
and it's not so much girls and guys, it's a feminine masculine. I think there's a time for us to utilize both tools.
Yeah, I think for men, it's got to come out visually. From a general sense, it seems that the issue has to come to a head and has to present itself to friends. Like, it has to be obvious enough in some ways sometimes for other friends and say, hey, what's going on? Like, you are right. And then it can open up to a certain extent. And like I said, in very small, like one-to-one, one-to-two sort of environments.
Yeah. I just think that to continue back to that thing about us blokes and how we discuss it, I agree that I can have friends that are struggling in their relationship and I won't know for a while. But I've got close mates that there is a time when they will talk about it. They will. But I think it applies too when, say, a mate can't find a new job and you know it's a problem for him, but he's not going to chat about it. Because he wants to work it out himself. You don't want to... There's a sense of, I can do it, I can handle this. And we don't want to look weak. But I can tell you honestly that when I've had real challenges in relationships and been trying to navigate them, we've talked about this before, there's a few guys that I'll call, mates that are married, and I will go, mate, I really need your help. Like, and then they will be open about the challenges they've had in their marriage, which they wouldn't have told anybody ever before. And they openly say that, look, Mark, this is not something I would normally share. I've never shared, but, you know, this is a challenge that we had in our relationship. And I'm so grateful for those conversations because they give me an insight into a world I haven't entered.
Yeah. And that was going to be my point is like, as men, we don't freaking learn from each other. Like and I just think it's by nature, whatever it is, but you know, you think about when a woman gets diagnosed with a really difficult condition, she'll lean on her community of other women and tap into other people who have gone through the same thing and speak and engage directly with those people and summon support. And even if she doesn't summon it, it'll just come her way directly. Whereas men tend to receive that same information and go, no, I'm going to battle through it. I can figure this thing out. And it tends to be they get their support, if they have a significant other, through their significant other, because she's reaching out to her network saying, hey, has anyone else's husband or boyfriend gone through this too? Like, oh, yeah. And she'll come back and say, hey, turns out Sandy's husband had this thing too. And he did this and went and talked to that guy. And like, oh, okay. It's interesting. We just don't really seek that stuff out. I don't know whether that's ever going to change, but it just makes it really interesting when it comes to relationships because we don't learn from each other. We don't,
Well, like this, they were talking about these sacred cows, and I'm not sure exactly what the sacred cow referred to, but I think they were essentially saying these are things that we hold up in our community that are actually unhealthy models. But one of them is that as soon as you've got a problem in your marriage, if you talk to someone saying, I'm not feeling attracted to my partner anymore, or we don't have any common goals, or we fight all the time, then there's this sense of, what do you mean? Come on, mate. You've got to do something about that, as if it's wrong rather than part of the journey. When I have spoken to really people that I really respect their relationships and I've asked for help and they've taught me, it's been awesome. Later, I've also noticed, like after years of knowing these people, there's been times when I've later found out they were having an epic challenge in their relationship. Just huge. Ones that I could never anticipate coming, but you know, they didn't even think. And they never reached out and said, hey, I've got this challenge. What do you think? Because it seems to me that once you're in the sanctuary of marriage, you're not allowed to admit that there's a problem. Where if they weren't in the marriage, I'm very confident that they would talk to me or talk to Pia. More so, there'd be more opening for it, because I couldn't believe some of the stuff that I've since heard. I'm like, mate, how the hell did you cope with that on your own? And they go, yeah, it was hard. And I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if there's a right or wrong, but it's a fascinating dynamic.
There's probably, I think, a sense of guilt in there too. Not only that you're not succeeding, but also that I would imagine it doesn't feel like that should be the first place you want to go. That you would go there when you're in dire straits of, like, you're trying to do everything you can to work through your relationship, and then it seems like it's time, particularly as a male, to want, like, summon other help.
Yeah, I think they think it's seen as a failure.
Yeah, right.
If it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's... the other thing I've noticed, us blokes, we're very black and white, and gross generalization. But I've noticed that guys will go, well, that's just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
Unaware that they could impact it. So whether it be an illness, it'd be like, oh, well, you know, I've just got to put up with this now. Or it's a, you know, it's a sex life. It's like, oh, well, that's just what she's like, you know. Or it's about how somebody spends money in the relationship. You're like, oh, you know, she does that. And it's a resolve to, well, that's just how it is. When in actual fact, there's so many ways for that to be a healthier experience. So if it's an illness, it could be like, well, hang on, have I got a healthy view of this? Like, maybe I need to find a counselor or somebody who's gone through the journey and hear how they handled it, because maybe I'm making unhealthy conclusions. Or maybe when it comes to the sexual relationship, maybe there's things that I don't understand and there's things that I'm not doing and there's a growing I could do. Or maybe with the spending, it's like, have I just thrown my hands up in frustration but not actually said, this is how this impacts me, and have I come up with a common vision about what we could build instead and listen to what they're trying to fulfill and what's their emotional needs? Is a course we could have gone on? It's like we commonly just come to a resolve of, well, that's just how it is now. And it's, I think it's an interesting discussion, like, well, when is it just like that and we need to accept it? And when is it time to go, no, honey, I think we should talk about this and maybe we could get this healthier?
Yeah, I think, well, it really still does work both sides, doesn't it? But I think that's a pretty interesting maybe example of an outcome of where you feel like there's been honest communication on something. But when you're sitting there going, well, that's just how it is, like, we've talked about it, but nothing happens. We don't go over it. Like, I've been honest about the issue, but that's just how it is going to be. Nothing's going to change her or me. I think that's an interesting predicament that perhaps is suggestive of not maybe achieving the level of honesty that might be possible. But the other one is like when you're waiting for them, like, what are you waiting for if you're in a relationship right now, right? Like, what are you waiting for your partner to do? Is there something that you've got in the back of your mind you're waiting for them to commit to or change or respond to? And I think that's a really interesting thing too, because that's like usually a good indicator of like what you need to work on.
Interesting. Yeah, because you're playing, if it's a relationship, you've got a role to play in that.
That's right. And it's suggestive of a need that you're waiting for them to fulfill. And if you're dependent on them to fulfill it, then I think that's something that is a good place to start, because they're going to be forever pressured into fulfilling that need unless you're honest about that need and hear their contribution to it. That usually results in you realizing that you can fulfill this need by either changing something or getting more,
seeing it differently.
That's right, or actively pursuing it.
Or exploring it deeper to find out what the actual issue is. I think the other thing, Mick, is that when we talk about this stuff, and if someone's got one of these things going on in their relationships, which we all do with every person, it's not just romantic ones, I think you got to be aware that when we're talking about having these conversations or this need met, and it is, you'll know the topic because you will think it is phenomenally difficult to talk about. It's got no way to be resolved. It's not your thing. It's their thing. You go, yeah, that's just way too hard. Like, that's the exact topics or dynamic we're talking about for relationships right now. That's the thing that if you think it can't be fixed, it can't be solved, that there'd be no way you could ever talk about that, or it's fully their problem, you know, and they need to make that change. That's the thing to find a better way to navigate, because as soon as you think it's stuck, then that's a real problem. And I've learned that even when I'm looking for a house or buying a car, I'll put down my prerequisites. I need these four things, and I can't find a vehicle like that, or I can't find a house like that. Well, one of those has got to change. And if you're not prepared to move one of them and you think it's permanent, well, I've only got that money, I've only got this kind of need, I've only got this kind of area I can live in, then you're not ever going to get it resolved. So you've got to look at these things to make a change. But I think the only way I've learned to do it is to go to someone who is an expert in this field and go, this is what I'm trying to navigate. What do you think? And that's why I'm a big fan for all sorts of counseling. Not just like reading self-help books, but actually going and having a human that you respect give you feedback, and multiple humans, because I've found some people, when I've gone and given them the challenge, their solution or their worldview is quite subjective, and I don't know that they nailed it. So that's why I've got multiple people on different topics, because I don't know that they're right, but I'll go and invest to try to navigate something.
Sometimes it comes from the least expected people too. You know what I mean? That advice, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it does. It comes out of the blue. You see something like on Facebook or something, you're like, oh my God, that's so true.
I just mean like it can be literally, you know, a grandfather that, you know, you think is just a grumpy old bugger, and all of a sudden like says something that's like the wisest thing you've ever bloody heard, you know?
So true. Hey, I got a question for you, actually. So when I listen to the Tim Ferriss podcast as an example, and it's on relationships, or I hear any kind of, because we're talking about marriage particularly right now in relationships, if I hear any kind of audio on it or read a book on it, or I hear somebody talking about how they met or the dynamic in their relationship, I constantly will compare. I'll be like, huh, do I have that or do I not have that? And often I can actually feel quite sick in the stomach in response, because I'm like, oh God, that's not, I don't have that, or that's, or something like that. And sometimes the thing that they're discussing, like let's take an example, that couple in the Tim Ferriss show, they said every night they go and sit out in their cane chair in the backyard with the sun coming down, which I don't know how they do in the winter, but nonetheless. And they have a drink that they only ever share together, and they just spend some time together, right? And they make, you know, that's a priority. Now, if I go, oh, geez, we never do that. Or they say, every time I see that person, I've got to be around them. I'm so excited. Just grab them, hold them, touch them. You're like, we don't always feel that. And so what I find is as I'm going crossing that river into being deeper into, you know, towards that whole like level of a forever commitment, or maybe not forever, a strong word, but a full on commitment to marriage or something similar. I'm constantly getting confronted by these things, and I'm trying to work out which bits are real, which bits actually matter. My conclusion on it is, well, I get to choose what kind of relationship I want. So if I want that, then I can have that. And if I don't have it, then get out of that relationship and move into another one or see if I can create it. But nonetheless, as I'm crossing the river, I keep hearing other people's opinion and view and what they value. And I get these little pangs of maybe I don't have that. Maybe I haven't got enough in this relationship. Maybe I'm making a mistake. But because you're already married, do you still have those sort of dynamics happen?
Yes and no. I mean, like, I didn't like listen to that interview and find myself feeling that same descriptive level of sickness in the stomach or anything like that. I mean, I'll hear them talk about stuff like that, and I just fully know that that's just part of their life and that works for them, but that I know full well there's no way that Liz and I would be in a position we're going to sit out on deck chairs and talk for hours on end because we just don't have the time with three kids. And so I'm understanding of those differences in the way that people engage in their relationship based on where they are in their life. But I think I usually look for the stuff that I relate to, and that's the stuff that I take with me the most. And what I took with me, as I seem to most of the time when I'm listening to discussions on relationships, it all for me is honesty. And that's what they ended up coming down to. It's just like, are you able to discuss that issue or this issue? And like, that is what it just comes down to. Not every time, but, and so that'll be more of what I would take away. Like, that's the confirming factor, is like, okay, that's what I have in common with these people, and that's what helps me feel validated. You know, other things could be completely different. Because here's a good example, right? Is like career, like two people that are like really career focused. Like I listened to an interview that once again Tim Ferriss did with I can't remember, it was a billionaire guy, and they were just kind of talking, and it sounded as though that the couple had really active big things that they were chasing. And that couple was the same, actually. That's probably a better example. I mean, he's like running Google X, and she's like was running, I think, a big science lab as a medical doctor. I mean, they just had a lot of stuff going on. So I could see how anyone could look at that and go, we don't have that. We're not like pursuing big things, either together or separately. I could see that being a really challenging thing to listen to. At the end of the day, like I get that, but that's not like, I can't imagine that being something that I need to live into. It's just more that I identify with the discussion where they just were coming back to the honesty part.
It's interesting because it's, so you're hearing that sort of content from having already reached the bank, from a metaphor point of view. You're like, so you've got a reference point to what matters and what doesn't. And I think when you're crossing the river, it's quite turbulent and there's a lot of confusion and you're not sure, you know, like I reckon as you move into these relationships, I speak for myself, I guess, there's no one else in the room.
Just the air conditioner or something.
Yeah, can you hear the heater on? I don't know. I kept the heater on today.
Terrible.
Yeah, I'm looking for the decision-making framework because I'm obsessed by healthy decision-making frameworks. Like, what's a good, healthy way to navigate something? And, like, a good decision. Yeah, like, what are a series of good decisions to make in any situation? And I'm constantly, in every relationship I've ever had, I've constantly been going, do I feel enough? What do I feel? Is this enough? And it's so fluid. One minute it's like, feels like boring and we're just doing nothing, watching telly, even though, you know, you'd hope that you'd have this exciting life all the time. Sometimes that just doesn't happen. Other times you're having incredible conversation as you're just doing something insignificant. Other times you're, feel you absolutely miss them and you feel, when you see each other, you feel wild passion. Like there's so many elements. And what I'm searching for is which ones are just moment to moment and which ones the constant that I go, oh, this is the feeling that I should be having more of, or have this feeling most of the time, to know to keep crossing the river, if you like, to keep staying it. So, you know, what Tim's model is, he says, I get in for 2 years and then I'm sort of, I don't quite hit the bank, and then I'm like, I'm done. I'm not gonna get across this river. I'm not gonna keep doing this. And you know, and there's this talk about, well, is it because of the person you're with, or is it because of the person you are? Conversation with God would say, well, it's the person you are, not necessarily the person you're with. But it also comes down to, what do you value? And then in that book, Sacred Cows, they're saying, well, what myths have you got in your head that you think are important that aren't important? You've got to navigate them. I personally find it all really challenging.
But at the end of the day, like, you've experienced it. Like, if you've been in a relationship, at some level you've experienced the bits and pieces that you're talking about. And so perhaps there's just the question of whether or not you can visualize that person being in your future or not, maybe. I don't really know, but I don't think there's any consistency, at least to me, that says that there's something to do with the particular emotions that you're always feeling or anything like that. I don't relate to any of that. That, you know, because you can have those emotions with any human being on the planet if you open yourself up to that. It's just a question, but that doesn't mean that you see a future with every single person on the planet either. So it doesn't really help to answer the question, but I don't think of it in the way that of having unique emotions that are reserved only and consistently for within a marriage, that don't exist outside of that, or that don't exist consistently in other relationships. It's just obviously trust and honesty do, but those exist in great friendships and great families too. And so in many ways, like if I'm seeking a business partner, then it does help me to a level of clarity, in that the same general feelings and ideas that I would think of in marriage is what I'm thinking about as I'm exploring if somebody was going to be a business partner. Like, it's I'm looking for honesty and trust and certain things that I know that I'm prepared to wake up and go to work alongside this person every day. And even though we could have different interests, we'll retain the same respect and all of that stuff.
That's really helpful, Mick. That's really helpful. No one's ever said that before. Because, like, you've crystallized something to which I feel like I've naturally been moving towards, but I'm a big one for, like, you've got to have a common vision of the future. I feel like that in business and relationships and everything. But just to hear you say, yeah, it's not about moment-to-moment emotions because you're having those with everybody, which I agree, I've watched that, I've seen that. But for you to just go, no, that's not how I moved into this, and that's not my day-to-day experience. It's more so about, do we see ourselves being together in the future? Are they part of my life? Are we planning things together? And like that might sound so bloody obvious now and so simple, but I know that to be true because I'm experiencing it more and more, but that just dissolves a lot of assessment because I think that like that whole sacred cow idea, and separate the sacred cow for people aren't familiar with that work, that like if you look at the classic romantic comedy and the Disney formula that says, you know, that they meet and there's this magic and then there's this challenge and they get through the challenge and then they live happily ever after, or there's this I just want to think about them all the time and, you know, I'm dating this one guy but I keep thinking about them and they're the real one for me and they're the one true love and all that kind of stuff. All those things are actually, they encapsulate emotion. So we don't know that stuff's getting into our psyche. You rarely see a storyline where they've got a similar vision of the future and it's about them having a similar vision, so they build a relationship to build that vision. You know, it's sort of tacked onto the end of things. But I think we live in a world where we're really emotion sells in a, you know, in any kind of story or presentation, or we in every TV commercial, they're selling an emotion. So then as soon as you get an emotion shoved in your face, like, you know, you just have to watch, it's real shame actually, but you watch morning television on a weekend where they're playing music clips, and the music clips are just so sexually driven, and the imagery is so strong that it is easy for an adult or a young person to have that a sexual emotion triggered, and then look at their own world and go, "I'm not experiencing this." But it's actually a real artificial creation that, like, they've deliberately done it to trigger those things to sell you a record.
Yeah, it's funny that I just interviewed a guy on my podcast on Sustainercast, and his name's John Rooks, and he's in Maine, and did a TEDx talk on sustainability. But it was on authenticity, and he introduced this term called the simulacrum, which is a copy of an original that doesn't really exist. And so he talked about this in the world of sustainability. Genius. But he's basically saying, like, it was a great presentation, so it's worth checking out. But he's saying, you know, porn is a simulacrum, which is very funny. He's just saying, you know, it's a copy of an original that, but the best of my knowledge, doesn't really exist. And so I thought that was quite comical. But in generally, you know, you're sort of referring to, if we just talk about it in the business sense, you know, it's like, it's BP changing their brand name to Beyond Petroleum, and they're doing nothing to try to, like, anything beyond petroleum represents less than 1% of their portfolio. So they're really not doing that.
Well, it actually
that.
Represents them being eliminated.
Right.
That's their number one product, well, is petroleum.
Well, their energy and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, they're not actually living into that outcome. And it's the same thing with, you know, the advertisements of whatever, the Prius. There's, like, shining, beautiful green hills and people laughing and better connection with your family and, you know, everything's just, there's like flowers coming out of the tailpipe of the vehicle, and it's this image of something that doesn't exist, but it's driven to try to have you embody that, because that's what you think sustainability looks like. And you think of that in the world of relationships, and it's like, that's the simulacrum that you're experiencing, is this original that doesn't even exist, and yet you're using that as your stick to go, what is it, you know, like, I'm not enough. And at the and all of that in his discussions kind of weeded down to, it's actually honesty that we're looking for. It's when BP says, we want to be doing this and we're not doing that right now, and we want to know how, that's when people really connect to a brand that says. He had an example of the Green Mountain Coffee Company here in the US, which is a big poured coffee company. And they said, we're doing all this great stuff, but we just bought the Keurig cups. And we're basically selling a brand now that's one of the most wasteful single coffee drinks that are available. Like, it's devastating for the planet, and we don't know what to do about it. But it's in good hands because we care about it. So we're going to try to do something, but we're stuck. Mm. And he was talking about that being something that people go, yes, like, that's what we need. And I think, you know, reality is, we're not going to see that in the top charts anytime soon of music. Mm. But that's why I think people connect to even some of those videos and the songs like Happy from you know, Pharrell or whatever. You know, it's like some of those things hit every now and then, and it's because it's a reality. Like, people connect and go, I'm living that. I can see that in my life, and it makes me feel happy to be able to, like, enjoy and celebrate that.
It's interesting, the feedback I got from the Live More seminar I ran recently. And was that a lot of the feedback has been, they, and this is what I wanted to achieve, but people feel more successful than they've ever felt before. And you said this to me another time, that I make people feel famous. Don't even make them famous, I make them feel famous. And it's not an illusion. I just redefine success for people.
This is something I've thought about continuously with you, actually, that I think that's a... Yeah.
It's a constant in my work, right? Yeah, so... And which is what you're saying about the relationships too, like this, I don't even know how to say that word you just said then. What is that word again? Where you make something fake?
Simulacrum, which is, yeah, when...
Simulacrum.
It's right? a copy of an original that doesn't even exist.
Exactly. And look, there's so many people that are trying to build lives and careers around a simulacrum, whatever it is, right? And they, because they've got this idea of success that it's like, you got a huge amount of money coming in. You're not working very hard. You've got the perfect partner. You're on the beach. You just do a few emails a day. Someone else looks after all your world. You've got cleaners to do this. And, you know, you've got a fantastic new car coming all the time. And you're catching private jets. And you basically live in the entourage. And it's madness. And what I was reiterating to people on the seminar, I was also showing them how to do this. But I was pointing out, I said, you've got everything you want. Like, there was a time when you looked at the clothes that you're wearing and you're like, I want those clothes. And now you got them. And you're in them. Have you not noticed that you achieved it? Well done. And there was a time you wanted the job you're in and you wanted that kind of income and you've got it. And well done. And even that conversation, you know, I think we had maybe off air with Brona one time when she said she wanted to work 4 days a week and she's now working 4 days a week and she goes, oh, but I wanted to do this and this and this as well. And I was like, well, you should have decided that 3 months ago because, and I say to everyone, you can have anything you want within 3 months. Like it might generally feel that you can have just about anything you want. Now, of course, if you want to have a child in 3 months, that's a minimum of a 9 month process, right? So, you can create significant change on most things in a short period of time. You just got to understand the action. But more so, the place to start is to realize that you are successful. You got what you wanted. You just got to notice.
You've just hit on something.
But you've got to see a different... You've got to have a different view of it. Like it's that you're thinking success looks like this, but actually looks like this. And what I've been learning through all this stuff, listening to relationships, I'm trying to go, okay, what is the relationship? Like I've been sold all these ideas. And a part of me is a bit embarrassed to admit that, but I also realize that I ain't no fool. The whole world is having this experience where we get sold an idea, an idealism, and then we've got to go, is that real? And is it my idealism? And what's a more, not so much realistic, but what's a more natural expression of that? What's a more likely expression of that in my life? And how do I want my experience of it to be? And that's what's been really challenging with, you know, this relationship stuff, is that I've learned that there is a lot of bullshit that I've accidentally been taught that I've got to let go of. And so when you say, no, it's not about all those emotions, it's actually about us being able to see each other together in the future, working on things, similar activities. I'm like, huh. That's not even emotionally driven. That's about the future. That's not about an emotion so much.
Mm. Well, you did hit on something that I think is an interesting... That there's two big topics that I think are the elephant in the room when it comes to getting over. One is meeting the right person, right? And the other one is having children. And it seems like pretty much both are outside of our control. It's as though they're a biological event that we're waiting to happen. And I think it's interesting because that seems like two big hurdles that are hard to get over. You know what I mean? And perhaps those are their needs. And I don't know what else to say about it other than just that they're two big things that we all see coming up time and time again. And with what you were saying earlier, essentially what you're talking about, it was like choosing happiness and seeing that you're already achieving these things and moving toward the life you want, but then those things eventually come up and people stop at that because they realize, well, I don't have the choice over that. I just need to wait and want it and hope it's going to happen. And then comes a time when it's not happening. And that was a little bit of what Tim Ferriss was talking about. It's like, I'm right on that verge of like, it's just not going to happen. And having to begin to resolve that he may not have that kind of a legacy that continues on for him in terms of having children, for example, because he may not find a significant other. I find that interesting. I don't know the answer to it.
So what's also fascinating about that is that, and this is something I've gone through, is that there's quite a few philosophies collide at that point. So one, if we take that example of Tim Ferriss saying, well, maybe that's not for me. We hear them say, yeah, when someone decided it's not for them, they feel at ease and they can be happy with that. But there's other people saying, well, did you just surrender and give up? But in a, if we take, say, the model like the law of attraction, where, you know, you've got to presume it and be it and see it happening, then you go, well, hang on, I need to be able to see my partner coming, I need to see it, but I can't see it, so maybe it's not going to happen. But then you've got a law of serendipity where just things just fall into your lap and suddenly you meet that person. And then you also got something like, say, a conversation with God says it's not actually the person you meet, it's who you are. And are you the kind of, are you ready? And then we've got the idealism about seeing who our ideal partner is. And what I'm learning is many of the people we've got as ideal partners are actually a framework of what has triggered us in the past, what has turned us on or switched us or made us come alive. But that's not necessarily the dynamic that could last forever or have a similar future. So you're having all these different ideas collide where someone like Tim at 38 says, I'm not, and I've been that person too. At 42, I still go, I don't even know if I'm going to have kids. I don't know. And part of me goes, used to go into conflict saying, oh, but hang on, if I need to have that, hold that vision in my head and move towards it and be that person. And now I'm like, ah, it's bullshit. What I've got to do is just move into what feels good today and just be accepting and enjoy this moment and allow it to unfold. But I think that there was a really good model. Like, I think that you got 2 points that you really clear elephant through. One is meeting the right person, and two, the having kids feeling like they're both out of your control. On the meeting the right person, I thought they had a fantastic point in that podcast where they said that it was a guy that had been dating and he'd broken up with someone, moved to a new area, didn't know anyone, so he got on Tinder.
Mm-hmm.
And he realized that he loved girls in this age bracket. I think it was 28, blonde, well-educated, something.
Stanford, and he dated
a shitload of them. And then he realized after a while of dating them that that actually wasn't his type. That he, at no time did he end up being satisfied. And they were saying that it can take other people without doing, say, the Tinder example. They're not saying go and hop on Tinder and date like crazy, but they're saying it can take a lot of people a long time to realize that's not their type, and that your type was probably seeded in your psychology at a very young age. Now, I've always said my type is dark hair, tall. Like, and I look back, I remember watching a TV show called China Beach as a kid and thinking that woman on China Beach was the hottest woman on the planet. Now, I only must have seen like 3 episodes, but I was like, and I look back when I said that, I was like, God, it probably started then.
Mm-hmm.
And for no particular reason, it was just triggered, right? Like, because I cleverly designed these shows to do that. And then, and since then, I've always been moving towards and been attracted to that look. But if I look at my relationships, hardly any of my relationships have actually been that look. And what I'm learning to do is having to let go of who I think I'm attracted to and instead start to notice more. And I've started to notice that often what you want is actually right in front of you. And you just don't, but you've got all these bullshit frameworks. And so on that first one, meeting the right person, I'm realizing it's less about meeting the right person and more about dismantling who you think the right person is.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is like when you're attached to an idea or an outcome, I think that seems to limit your ability to attract something different.
Or better, even.
Yeah, and if we take the idea of, well, trying to meet the person that you think you're supposed to meet, and you think that that person is going to be successful, they're going to be probably a business owner or whatever, you know, not because of the money, but because that must like represent that they know what they want and they're very decisive or whatever. You know, you got all these values in your mind that means that now you're starting to kind of try to show up in places where those people are. That's great, but it means that you're not bringing your best game to the art class or to the coffee shop because you're not, you know, when you're engaging with somebody on the other side of the counter that can be perfectly attractive that's serving you coffee and every morning you close to that idea because they don't fit that mold. And somehow I think it would be interesting to be able to like work through those things and figure out what that outcome is that you're attracted to. And so, because for somebody that wants to have kids but can't for reasons where maybe they don't have a partner or maybe they just can't physically have kids, that's still an outcome they're attracted to. And that's an emotion that is, I'm not going to say achievable and satisfiable in other ways, but it's going to be infinitely more difficult to move into what else could help fill that bucket if you're still attached to the other bucket. Do you know what I mean? I don't know how somebody goes about navigating through that necessarily, but you know, I feel like seen that more and more where people are fixated on the need to find the right person. And it's almost like you sort of want to be able to say, like, you need to almost like let go of that because that becomes the unattractive thing for the people that are attracted to you or might be. They're too nervous to make a move because they're too afraid that they might not be the right fit or that they probably wouldn't be.
Well, you're actually not available, so you're definitely right. You're just going to get shut down.
You put it nicely, yeah.
Yeah, and I've had so many people tell me in the past that I'm not available, but the truth is I wasn't to them. That's true. But I think what I've learned on that journey, if this is of value to anybody listening, is that I started to realize that in the quest to be with the ideal, I was being really disrespectful to the people that were presently in my life. And I started to realize that this is who I'm in a relationship with now. And this is even if I'm not in a relationship, well you are in a relationship, you know, you meet someone at a party and you're sort of thinking about them a fair bit and they're sort of texting you or you're saying hello to them or you keep catching them, you're like, oh, there's this energy and you're like, oh, that's not who I'm really attracted to. But the truth is you're in some sort of relationship. There's been some sort of draw or connection. And I used to really suppress that, but it'd be making it a mess because the truth is it had to play out. And I started to go, well, this is the relationship I'm in now. This is who I'm talking to. And there'll be a day when I'll either want to go forward or I'll want to get out. But right now, rather than go, oh no, this is wrong, which I used to do all the time as a control freak. I'd be like, no, this is not it. I'm like, just let it unfold. And that doesn't mean being something stupid, but it means that if you're thinking about it and you're trying, like in conversation with God, it says what you resist persists. And that was really liberating because I started to, you know, like that whole framework we've talked about before with friends, season, reason, lifetime. I find that happens with romantic relationships too. Sometimes people come in for a season, sometimes for a reason, and sometimes a lifetime, and you don't know yet. And you don't want to suppress the reason they're coming in. There's something to either be experienced there or to learn there or to be, and sometimes that is a painful journey. You're like, oh, damn, I'm bloody not making that mistake again. But you've got that out of your system. But I used to be constantly just not allowing any relationship. And sometimes I still think that, like, I'm not giving that out as advice. It's something I've just chosen to do. But sometimes, like I said to friends a while ago, a few years ago, I was like, I just don't want to break up anymore. Breaking up fucking sucks. It fucking sucks. And so you get to a point where therefore I would go, look, I just don't even want to get into something that I don't think it's going to work because I fucking can't deal with this shit. Like, you always get blamed. It's always your fault. You're like, it's not. It just unfolds, you know? And so with the great relationships I've had in my life, they actually didn't play out like that. They were actually, you both go, God, we're sort of done here and this was great and there's a respect, but it's still tricky. So sometimes it's been times I go, oh, I can't be bothered having that. But that's, you sort of, but my point is like that availability thing, you're right. Once you've got this framework of the ideal, then you're close-minded to other things that are right in front of you. And I've definitely been guilty of that, so guilty of that. My friends will laugh as they listen to this going, yes, Dobson, hello.
So two things, right, that are a little bit on a different subject. They're both, well, one's a question, right? There's somebody that works in my mill building and she runs a company. It's basically a matchmaking, not dating, whatever you want to call it. But
yeah.
So she has a portfolio of people and she tries to connect them. And
no, I'm not prepared to be on the portfolio. I'm sorry, Mick. No, if that's what you're asking me.
That's not, mate.
Okay. Yeah, look, you know, it's all right. Just so many people ask me, you know.
I'm not going to lower the standard of the portfolio. But I run into her every now and then while I'm grabbing a coffee. Hey, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. And so I sent her the link to those two, to the Tim Ferriss podcast that was on that. And then I also sent it a link on another one from a few weeks back where he was talking with a computer hacker that did hacking in online dating, which I thought was fascinating too. And so, in conversations with her, what she was saying was she has a lot more women on her portfolio, which is understandable. But they keep asking her the same question and she doesn't know the answer to it. And it's, where do women go to find men? And so she was saying to me, like, where would you go to meet women? I was like, well, that's pretty straightforward, really. Like, you know, for men, at least, I think, like, they just join particular, I don't know, clubs or whatever. I mean, it's just sort of, it seems like maybe a bit of an easier process, but I didn't quite know the answer to this. I was like, oh, I don't know. Because I don't
really. So you asked me that another time. I'm not sure if we did it on air or not. We talked about this a little bit.
Mm.
Can I add? Are you ready? Because I got some ideas on that.
Yeah. And I'm kind of going beyond bars and stuff like that, obviously. Like, yeah. This is like genuine relationships. Like, where do you. And I had some thoughts on it too. So go ahead.
Well, people are first off going to not like some of my answers.
That wouldn't be the first time, so continue.
Yeah, I know, but because it's a bit too deep. But the first one, it's not where you're going, it's who you're being.
Oh, yeah, that was what I was going to say. You beat me to it. I thought you were going to say that.
Like, people get there and then they're needy or they're conservative or they're trying to find their love of their life and they're checking them out and they're talking about, oh, I'm looking for somebody like this, what are you looking for? And they go, you're like, dude, that you're being ugly. Like, it's not an attractive quality. Now, sure, someone else, like, maybe it's worked for some people, but what you really want to be is, like, available and open, but not clingy, not like I'm going to make this happen. And you want to be someone that is able to be fun around because, you know, I think we've talked about this before, but I was helping some kids at camp years ago and these girls walked past the boy's tent and the boy yelled out as the girls walked past. He's just like, show us your tits. And I was like, mate. So I went across this boy's tent and the girls ran off mortified. And I said, boys, what are you doing? And they're like, well, you know, and they're all, oh, he said it, I said it. Oh, no, he didn't. I didn't say it. And I was like, you like these girls? Yes. What do you want to do? And they wanted to, you know, go sit next to them at movie night on camp and they wanted to date and... And I was like, mate, do you think when you sit next to a movie night, you're going to turn to him and go, show us your tits? He's like, no. I go, then why are you doing it now? Why do you think that's going to work now? I'm like, what do you do? He goes, we'll probably just, I don't know, talk about stuff. Like what? He goes, I don't know what she likes doing for movies and see if we can be in the same classes together. And I'm like, well, why don't you just start there? Because that's what's sustainable in the relationship. And I think that when you want to go to places, like you're saying about going to the coffee shop, there's somebody that you can be so that you're available. Not like, oh, look at me, I'm single, but the whole like, I'm talking to you. I'm present with you as a person and I'm present to this person. I'm not wishing I was somewhere else. I'm not wishing I was in the future. I'm not planning on going, oh my God, this is the one. I'm not projecting into the future. I'm just there having a good day today. And if it plays out more and it plays out more. And I've got a cousin, like a sort of distant cousin, that she'd actually made the decision that she just wanted to get married. And she's like, right, I'm going to find men. And she goes, suddenly men came out of everywhere. And she said, I just started going to things that I enjoyed. She'd gone to a church group. She went to a book reading club. She went to a whole lot of things that she liked, but she also knew they'd be social. And she didn't put any pressure on one relationship or one activity. She was just doing a whole lot of them. And she was doing them because if there was a guy there or wasn't a guy there, it didn't matter. She was still going to be enjoying that activity.
Now, that was pretty much going to be my answer too, was like go, like get active on the things you love to do and show up in places and be who you are there. And like don't just like show up, but like be who you are and project that, amplify it. And, you know, I mean, that sounds so wanky, I know, but I'm not saying that as advice. It was just sort of like, this is the only answer I could come up with too, because I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, like, because then I was like, what I did was like, I was at the gym this week and I was like, oh, well, maybe, like, I was like role playing that out, going, would the gym be the like a place where you would, well, you know, potentially you're going to meet guys that like are interested in looking after their own well-being, and therefore they might have a healthy respect for you know, relationships and things like that. But I was like, but there's no consistency there. I was like, at the end of the day, you need to be able to have a conversation with a guy at the gym that you don't feel like you're trying to create something out of it. I was like, the only way it would work in the gym is if you're showing up and just being joyful and conversational at the gym and not looking for someone at the gym. You're just there because you want to be at the gym. And did you know, and that, yeah, I guess I agree with you in that way. But
look, I also, on that one, like I met a girl years ago at the gym and we dated for a year or so. And my mates were like, good, well played, Dobson. How the hell do you meet people at the gym? I've been going to the gym for years. I never meet anybody at the gym. And I was like, really? Because I can meet someone anywhere. And that sounds like there's other times where I haven't been able to meet anyone. But I mean, my point is that I don't think you need to. Some people, like, they understand how to do the bar thing really well, but then you put them in a gym and they don't know how to talk to anyone, you know?
Yeah, oh my God, my script doesn't work here.
Yeah, I know. Like, super loud music, I'm useless. Any other environment, I'm fine. But here's the model on that, and I think a girl or a guy can do it, and it's just that first step. And I think it's important to not do it. I think it's important to do this right through your life so it's natural for you. It's not contrived. But the rule is you say something, and we've talked about this before probably, Mick, but you say something nice, and then you follow up with a question. And when I met this girl years ago, I was just doing my regular routine, and I'm stretching, and I think it must have been the end of my routine or something, and this girl came down and she was stretching next to me, and her flexibility was insane. Now, I wasn't ogling her going, oh my God, she's so hot. Like, it was just like, I looked at her, I was like, and I instinctively, because I do this so often, I just said, out of the blue, something along the lines of, oh my God, I only wish I had that flexibility. How the hell did you do that? You must be doing this stretching forever. And she just spoke back, because I said something nice, asked a question. She's like, oh, I don't know, I've always been able to do it. I did dance a bit as a kid, but yeah, it's pretty easy. And then she said, why, do you struggle with it? I go, yeah, look at the range here. And we just started talking about stretching. And then I was like, all right, see you next time. See you around. And then, but we both had a sense that we both worked out that night.
Yeah.
So I came back the following Wednesday or something, and she was there, and I was like, hey, how are you going? And chat, chat, chat. And I said, I might see you later when you're stretching or whatever. And she's like, yeah, yeah. And then we built it slowly. But I also think the important step, so a guy or girl can do that, but I think it's important, and this is not a blanket rule, but seems to, you know, there are exceptions to every rule, but generally, I think it's important at that point, though, to answer your friend's question, is that the girl needs to get a sense of the guy's leading it forward or moving it forward. If the guy's not the one moving it forward, if she's sort of moving it forward, then some guys are just going to be quite opportune there and keep being in the relationship and they've never had you've never given them a chance to clearly lead it forward. You've asked them, do we want to go out? And they go, okay. But you really got to get a point where they go, hey, do you want to go out? Or do you want to do the next step with me? But I think it's that that whole like compliment question, I do that all the time. Like, I was in the shops recently and this girl had this, like, it wasn't a girl, she was like just a kid. She had this funky hair color. She put a purple rinser or something. And I was just picking something off the shelf, saw her hair. I was like, oh, awesome hair. Did you do that yourself? How did you do that? And she's like, yeah, no, I just did it myself. It was like this. I was like, sweet. And I just kept on walking. Like, it was like, yeah, awesome. And so she feels good, I feel good, and no agenda. And I think it's about being that person that is just, you know, and I know, I'm sort of know you know this, Mick, so I'm not saying this at you. I mean, but it's like, for, if you haven't heard these ideas before, people, like, that's a fundamental social skill that liberates opportunity.
Hmm. Interesting.
You did say you had something else. You had a question and another point.
I
and
did.
Then we're nearly done.
Yeah, this has been a long one. So, yeah, well, it's just another episode that I listened to recently of the Good Life Project, and he interviewed a lady by the name of Tamsin Fidel, I think it's pronounced. And so she's a journalist and a television anchor on Evening News in New York. And so she was married to a guy that basically they started an online dating company that was very successful. And so he became somewhat of a celebrity expert type person that would be also on TV weighing in on issues relating to the dating scene. And then she was, you know, on the news, speaking the news. And things got rocky after a while and they separated and went through a divorce. And her whole story blew up and became the news. So she was basically breaking up with her husband on television with everybody talking about it, and pretty epic. And so the conversation was about what it was like to go through that. And so it's a good episode to listen to because there was a couple of things on the back end of it that I thought were interesting or that I had never really thought of or empathized with as much before. And one of those was she was talking about she realized for the first time that I actually have to get used to kind of what it means to be divorced, but like how that's changed over time, the perception of that, and how to grow into that. And so I thought that was kind of interesting. She had to figure out how to be divorced. And then she also mentioned a book, I think, or somebody that had brought up this phrase because she's 42, 43 and kind of said, well, I've just gone through a divorce. Like, this is kind of a nail in the coffin as far as being able to have kids because I was so career focused. And so she latched on to a friend's work on this idea of otherhood, which was basically this phrase or a term given to otherhood, self-explanatory, right? And so I don't know much about what that is, but I just thought it was really interesting language, and it was really interesting to sort of contrasting everything we've just been talking about.
Because I've had my mate Pete Dry said that to me one time. He said, "Mark, maybe you won't have kids," he goes, "because you've just got so many." And meaning that I've like tens of thousands of kids have been on my programs, like tens of thousands, and maybe would it be 100,000? I don't know. That's a stretch. Like, it's easy to say that, but it's like, but you're like, I'm constantly receiving emails from them, constantly bumping into the street, and they're growing up and they're getting stuck in a different situations where they're like 25 or 29 now, and they're like, can you help me with this, or can you be a reference for that, or this has just happened, what's your opinion? And I'm mentoring these people, which I really enjoy, and I've made a real commitment to anybody that's been on my SPY program that it wasn't a deliberate commitment, like a it's sort of evolved, but I feel committed to those people that went on my program because it changed their life when they were young. There's about just over 1,000 that went, and I remember most of their stories, but also because they were on that program, they have a fundamental understanding or way of thinking. And then when they contact me, I can refer to concepts, but also, you know, I started a journey with them. But this, and so he was saying, you know, that you've got thousands of kids. And I was like, yeah. Now, I didn't want to choose that otherhood as a cop out, as a, yeah, that's a good reason to not have kids sort of thing. But I also was, and continue to be, try to be really open to my role on the planet. What's the natural, what's the wisdom of me being here that I don't understand? And maybe that's my role, so do that well. But I don't think they have to be exclusive, but it, but I've had that otherhood idea pointed out to me before.
Yeah. And it's, well, it's like anything else. I mean, if you are going to have kids, then whether or not that's a fluke or whether it's intentional, either way, you have to then make the decision to live into father or motherhood. But the same thing happens on the flip side. You don't not get to live into fatherhood or motherhood. You choose, like, you're sort of like choosing to live into otherhood, so to speak. So at some point in life, I think we all make that decision of which direction that's going to be. And even though it doesn't feel like we get to make the decision, like, we kind of do have to make the decision to live into whatever it is that's going to be a direction. Until something different happens. And as she said, like, I can still do it. There's still stuff that could happen. But in the meantime, like, I've got a whole otherhood to begin to live into. And there's all kinds of other people that are within that as well. It's just refreshing language to hear. That's all.
Yeah, it is. And I've seen a lot of my friends do that where they're not having kids, so their nieces or nephews or their best friends' kids become so important to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that done in really healthy ways and in really unhealthy ways where you go, oh, this person's not even available. Like, and it's not about excitement. It's not like, oh, can I show you another photo? And, oh, how great are they? That's all great. But it's sometimes when you notice that, well, there's no space for other good friendships. It's about having contrast. Sometimes you're like, hang on, like, you're there all the time. What if, where's the space for anybody, not even a romantic relationship, just like that contrast of all different types of friends. And I think you go through patches in life, so I don't want to get too black and white about that and make people feel bad about where they're at, because that's not the intent. But I think it's a case of going, yeah, like, be that awesome uncle, be that awesome aunt, be that awesome best friend, like surrogate aunt and uncle. But also have your life. Also be growing your passions and interests and yeah. There's a lot to achieve in life though, isn't there, Mick?
There is, mate.
Goddamn rules.
What country are you going to do next week?
Well, somewhere that doesn't have a diarrhea named after it. Something came up where to be in America in... Well, there's a couple of opportunities to be in America this year, but I'm like, you know what? I just
can't get.
I've got to work. Not because I want to work. I actually want to be writing some blogs. I would love to be working on a new book. I have clients here that probably would appreciate some of my time at some point. I have a house that needs to be maintained, and I want to do these things. And I want to do them without the runs. It's very difficult to be working on projects when you've only got 15 to 20 minute windows of attention, right? So I'm not going away immediately, but we did just book a trip to Whitsunday Islands in October or November, I think. So
you poor bugger.
And then I'm going to Thailand next January, of course, and there's quite a few trips. Actually, there's a bit on, they're just not international.
Good for you, mate.
Yeah, well, when I have even married and kids, that won't happen. I'll just sit and get fat watching television.
That's what I'm doing.
That's the conclusion of the marriage. Journeying, it shouldn't be journeying into marriage. Journeying into overweightness.
And watching travel documentaries.
Wishing you were there. Commenting on other people's international posts on Facebook.
That's right.
Mate, it's been a great chat. I hope that's of value to people and lots to talk about, but we'll do it again next week.
Yeah.
It's always fun, mate. Thank you for the chewing the fat.
Yes, thanks, mate. Thanks for listening, everybody, if you made it this far. And hopefully this isn't the last time you listen. See you, everyone.
Right.
You've been listening to Risking Failure. To join the community and access more free content, news, and updates, subscribe at riskingfailure.com.